How's it going, everybody, and welcome to episode number 40 of Master My Garden podcast. Now, in this week's episode, I'm going way out of my comfort zone and talking about a topic, houseplants. And as I said to our guest a couple of minutes ago, that if I was to rate my, I suppose, knowledge of houseplants on a scale of 1 to 10, it would be certainly no higher than 2 or 3. And I don't have many houseplants, and for some reason I like them, but it's just something that I don't know that much about. Now, our guest today is Jane Perrone, and Jane has her own podcast on houseplants called On the Ledge Podcast, and she also is a freelance journalist. She writes for a couple of magazines, and she's currently crowdfunding what looks like a brilliant book on houseplants called Legends of the Leaf, and that's something that we'll talk about. So there's lots to cover. Again, as I say, way out of my comfort zone because my knowledge base is so poor here, but I know Jane is very good at giving houseplant advice to beginners and experts alike, so really looking forward to this. So Jane, you're very, very welcome to Master My Garden podcast.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, so as I said off air, gardening houseplant knowledge for me is quite poor, but it's obviously one of the biggest growth areas in gardening over the last couple of years, and I suppose particularly since lockdown this year, houseplants seem to have gone through the roof in terms of sales. So they're growing in popularity, and obviously then people take them home, and I guess some people don't quite know what to do with them. So this is where your podcast really comes in, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah, houseplants have gone through the roof during lockdown. When I started the podcast in 2017, I could see that houseplants were kind of coming back into fashion, and that's why I decided to start the podcast when I did. But I've got a lifelong interest in houseplants. I've been growing them since I was a little kid. But I brought it on the podcast with The Guardian, a general gardening podcast with The Guardian. And when that ended, I kind of really missed making a podcast, and I just thought houseplants is a great topic that is a specialist topic of mine. And there isn't a houseplant podcast out there, which is why I decided to do you on the ledge. And it's been amazing in the past 3 years to see houseplants rise in popularity and then during lockdown absolutely explode in interest. So, yeah, it's a really exciting time to be involved in houseplants. And you're right, people often do go and impulse buy a load of plants and then they're not quite sure what to do with them, which is where, like any area of gardening, I'm sure it's the same for you. You know, you have to go and do a bit of research, maybe go online, maybe get some books, maybe talk to some other people who know what they're doing, and you gradually build up your knowledge base. I mean, you know, if you were to ask me about, I don't know, alpines, you'd probably find that there's areas of my gardening expertise which are extremely limited. The other one, I've just been doing my final set of RHS Level 2 exams, and that included the unit on lawns, and I absolutely hated studying that because I know the theory, but my lawn is just, I'm a very laissez-faire lawn person, and so having to answer all these questions about scarifying and fertilizing is very disturbing to me. But anyway, everyone's got their weak spots, but houseplants for me have just been something I've been into ever since I can remember. So for me, it's a natural thing, and it's great. It's really great to be able to see other people coming into to getting houseplants and asking for advice, and that's what I love doing. So hence the show.
Yeah, it's a great idea, and I suppose in terms of gardening, there's not many gardening, I suppose, fields that can transfer literally to anywhere in the world, because houseplants, within reason, are the same. They grow all around the world. The house conditions are generally the same. I know obviously there's slight variations, but for the most part they're generally the same, the temperatures, the light and so on. So it's good that, you know, your audience can be so worldwide, whereas a specific garden podcast, you know, due to climatic reasons might be more located in certain general areas. So it's great from that point of view as well.
Exactly. I mean, I didn't really think of that when I started the podcast, but you're absolutely right. And indeed, sort of 2/3 to 3/4 of my listeners are in North America, and people are always surprised when I tell them that. But yeah, there's lots of Americans listening to the show, and from, you know, Florida, where obviously lots of the houseplants that I talk about you can grow outside, to Nebraska and places which are very cold in the winter, where you definitely would be keeping your houseplants indoors pretty much all year round.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah, it's great to have that ability to be, for the information to be so transferable around the world. It's great. I suppose houseplants, it's a massive field, and in terms of, you know, individual varieties, care, there's so many variables there. So it's quite a broad topic, and that's why for you creating a podcast, it must be great, because you can literally go down a different avenue or a different plant type every week, and it's, you know, really exciting from that point of view. But for the purposes of this episode, and I know this is quite difficult, the top tips for growing houseplants.
Yeah.
Again, I suppose that's difficult because you have so many variables within houses, light, shade, little bit of water, too much water, and all those things. But if you could give sort of top tips for houseplants, what would they be?
Well, that's a really good question. And there are some generalized statements that you can make which apply to all houseplants. And I think the first one I would say is, when you're buying a plant, and I'm sure you do this, we do this with garden plants as well. You know, you make an impulse buy at the garden center or the nursery, and you don't really quite know what you've got or where you're going to plant it. But if you can do some research about your plant when you get it home and understand how it grows in its native environment, that is massively helpful in understanding what it's going to need from you. So we're not helped by the fact that oftentimes when you buy houseplants, they're literally labeled as a foliage plant or cactus or, you know, something even less helpful. So it's a bit tricky, but if you can identify what your plant is, and there are loads of different apps and websites that you can use to do that, and indeed books that you can use to do that, once you know what your plant is and where it comes from, it kind of does inform your care. So, you know, even just thinking about, okay, so this plant's a cactus, even if you don't know which continent it's from, you can have a good guess at what conditions it's going to like, what kind of soil it might be growing in the wild, how much water it might get, and how much light it might be exposed to. Likewise, if you've got a fern, thinking about where you've seen ferns growing in the wild, the kind of soil they're in, that kind of information can really help you to get your plant off to a good start. And the other thing I would say to people is, lovely though all these kind of hanging arrangements are and plant shelves and things, if you've got a plant that you're not really sure about, the best thing you can do is put it somewhere where you can see it really regularly. And I mean, throughout the course of the day, you're looking at it a lot. And that really helps to keep an eye when things go wrong. So if the plant starts to wilt, you're going to notice straight away. If there's any pests there, you're going to spot them immediately. I mean, if I've got any plants that are in this camp, I tend to put them on the windowsill in front of the sink, because I know I'm going to be standing there several times a day, and that way I've got access to those plants. I can see them, I can assess any problems, and I'm more likely to remember to water them, to be honest. So I try to put the plants somewhere where I can see them. A desk or on your desk is also a great idea.
It's funny, like, because that sounds like the most simple tip in the world, but I would imagine that someone goes into a garden center and they see a nice house plant and they think, I know where I'm going to put that. And then they bring it and they put it there. And literally, I would imagine that a big part of the problem with houseplants is that people do forget about them. They actually walk past them every day. They vaguely see it, but they're not really noticing it until something's wrong. And then when something's wrong, it can be too late at times.
Yeah.
So that's a good tip, is that, put it somewhere where you actually have to look at it. You have to see it.
Exactly. I mean, I talk about putting on your plant glasses, and, you know, generally in society, I mean, not amongst gardeners, obviously, but non-gardeners, and this does apply to lots of people who are buying houseplants right now, they don't really see plants. They're just a mass of greenery, and they're not really observing plants in the same way that they might observe an animal. And so once you start looking at plants and understanding what they're made up of, the different sections, different types of material they're made up of, you start to really see them, and that really helps you to understand their needs, and you'll notice changes much more quickly that way. And I do also recommend to people, if, especially if they start getting a bit of a houseplant collection going, that it's really worthwhile getting hold of a botanist lens or a magnifying glass or a jeweler's loupe, anything that you can use to sort of offer a bit of magnification when you're looking at your plant. And oftentimes that will solve a lot of the mystery that you might get. So you might see some sort of graininess on the underside of your calatheas leaves. Well, when you look under the botanist lens, you'll realize that you've got the graininess is actually the shed skins of spider mites, and you've got these little red crab-like spider mites wandering around, which you can't see with your naked eye, but actually with your lens, mm-hmm. you can start to spot these things much more easily. So once you get down to that level, it becomes, you'll spot things much more quickly and get your eye in and understand when a plant's even not looking any different, but just maybe looking a bit dull or a bit out of sorts, and that'll alert you to there being a problem.
Yeah, that's the way to do it is to become aware of them and notice them and not forget about them until there's a problem.
Yeah.
Obviously, as we said, houseplants have grown in huge popularity, and I suppose there is a lot of new gardeners now picking up houseplants for the first time. People are working at home, and I think they like to bring, you know, some form of houseplant into that space because for various reasons, for air purification, and obviously it feels a bit softer than just having computer screens and monitors and so on. But if we were to talk about sort of five houseplants that are best for beginners, what way would you be directing people? Now, I know, again, it depends on variables, but just sort of the five bulletproof houseplants that people could go for as a beginner.
Yeah, that's a really good question. As I say, the trouble is people often go into the garden centre or the big box DIY store and they see a Venus flytrap and they think, oh, this looks good. This how exciting, how interesting. And they pick up one of those, not realising that that's actually quite a tricky plant to keep alive in your home. And, I mean, it's the quickest waste of £5, basically, buying one of those Venus flytraps, unless you kind of gend up on the information you need to know. There are, though, lots of houseplants which will be incredibly tough, and these are the ones I tend to give to people who don't really know what they're doing because they're very hard to kill. I would say one of the best ones is the double Z plant, as it's known, or Zamioculcus zamifolia. Easy to remember because it's got such a distinctive name. Also sometimes sold as Zanzibar gem. And this is a foliage plant with stiff kind of architectural stems and glossy leaves, and it's a brilliant plant. It comes from Africa, and in its native home it is adapted to a wide variety of circumstances. So for example, if you put it in a shadyish corner and don't water it for a long time, it probably won't look any different after 6 months than it did for the first six months. It's a really, really tough plant. That said, if you want it to grow, to actually put on new leaves, you need to take a little bit more care of it, but it will adapt to a wide variety of conditions. Yeah, so you've got these lovely glossy leaves, and it looks really nice. There's also a form called Raven, which has got chocolatey brown, purpley brown leaves, which is also really lovely. Very slow growing, but it will just sit there and look beautiful. And all you really need to do is chuck some water on it every now and again and make sure that you occasionally wipe the leaves with a damp cloth so that it doesn't look all dusty. That's a good one. The other one that I think is one of those plants that is an old faithful that is pretty hard to do it, not much harm to, unless you're a veteran overwaterer, is Crassula ovata, the jade plant, or the money tree as it's sometimes known. This is the one that you often see in the windows of Chinese takeaways. And these can grow to quite impressive specimens. Like succulents, it will cope with a lot of sun, but also it generally tends to survive better than a lot of succulents when it's got a more organic, rich soil, a more humusy kind of soil. A lot of cacti succulents really don't like to have a load of, you know, very sort of claggy soil around their roots. But the jade plant is a bit more tolerant of that. And as I say, if you have it in a sunny spot, it will sit there and get bigger and without a hell of a lot of care. And you often see, if you go to your nana's house or your grandma's house, oftentimes they have really big ones of these they've had for absolutely years. And they're very generous plants in that you can just snap off a piece of stem, leave it on the side, and it will root, and you've got a new plant. So that's a really nice one. And there's loads of really interesting cultivars out there now. I rather like one called Hummel's Sunset, which has got beautiful red and yellow colouring if it's placed in full sun. And there's a few kind of curious ones. There's one called Gollum, which has got these kind of distorted leaves. So that's a really lovely plant, very easy to grow. Really, the only way you're going to kill it is if you just keep chucking water on it and it's in a pot with no drainage. So that's definitely a good one. How many more? Do you want a couple more?
Let's go for maybe two more.
Okay, well, one of the ones that is very kind of possibly another kind of old-fashioned plant, but I think it's coming back in popularity. Well, I'm doing my best to get it back in popularity, is the Aspidistra elatior. Now, obviously, this is still grown as a garden plant, but that's the brilliant thing about it, that it will grow in the garden, but it will also grow indoors. And again, it's one that you might find that elderly relatives have got a pot of, they've had for years and years. Slow growing, very tough, doesn't mind being in a dark, cold corner, will just do its thing, has these architectural leaves, which, I mean, it's not a plant that's going to make your jaw drop, but again, it's going to sit there and look attractive and not take much work at all. So that's another really good plant. The only downside with Aspidistra is they're quite expensive to buy because they're slow growing. So if you see someone with a nice specimen, you can always beg them for a piece of it.
Cutting.
they're really great plants and often handed down in families for generation after generation. And there's also some nice cultivars, some nice variegated cultivars too. Although in my experience, the variegation is not as good indoors as it is if you keep the plants outdoors, planted in the ground. So I've got a couple that I had indoors which were just not variegated at all. And as soon as I planted them out, the variegation started to come through. So yeah, you might find that you end up with them being plain green indoors. And one more. Okay, I would say actually that my last one would probably be the purple false shamrock, Oxalis triangularis, which is a really cool house plant, very popular now. But despite the fact that a few years ago, most plant nurseries would have laughed at you if you'd have said this is a desirable plant because it was just kind of a cheap as chips kind of thing. But it's got these beautiful dark purple clover-shaped leaves, grows from these little scaly rhizomes. And the brilliant thing about this plant is that if it dies back, don't think it's dead, because you can usually dig up the rhizomes and replant them and it'll regrow. So even if things go wrong and your plant suffers from a bit of a setback, you can bring it back from the brink quite easily via these little rhizomes. And interestingly enough, it's actually an edible. You can eat the leaves. They are very lemony in flavour, sort of a sharp lemon flavour. So you can use them on salads and so on. I wouldn't do that with plants that you've just bought, but if you've got a plant that you've had for a while and it's put out new leaves since it was bought, then you can harvest those leaves if you choose to. And you just have to be a tiny bit careful, in the same way as you would with sorrel, that you don't eat pounds of the stuff, because it does, it's not good to eat large quantities of it due to the oxalic acid. But it's a lovely plant. I don't eat mine. I know it's edible, but I tend to leave it because it's just so beautiful. But that's a really, really easy plant. You know, the only thing I don't like about it is really the pink flowers I find rather troublesome, but I tend to just pull those away and let it concentrate on the foliage. So that would probably be my fall.
Yeah, they're good. I, again, just showing my knowledge of houseplants. Two of them I've never heard of. So so it's good. It's good that I'm getting a lesson here as well, which is brilliant. Oxalis obviously can be eaten, but it's doesn't taste the best. I don't think it's okay as a little addition, but yeah, not the best. But it is a really attractive, interesting looking leaf. Ideal for a windowsill, I would say, like that kind of a interesting look about it.
Yeah, mine sits on a north-facing windowsill with a skylight above, and it's absolutely happy there. And there are some other oxalis species which you can grow indoors, including oxalis corymbosa aureo reticulatum, which has got these really lovely green leaves with yellow veining, which is really cool. So there's a few different ones you can collect if you get into oxalis.
Yeah, and I'm going to add two there myself. So when I said I've a small few houseplants here, really I don't. It's my wife looks after them. She likes them, and the two that we have here and they've done really well is peace lily and a ficus. I think it's a variegated ficus. Would that be correct?
Yeah.
The little story about the ficus was it was actually my wife picked it up in one of the big box stores for 20 cents. And it was on one of the trolleys, you know, these trolleys that were just before they go to their to be dumped out the back, and it was 20 yeah. cent. It was no more than 6 inches tall with two leaves on it. And when she brought it home, I thought this was hilarious because I couldn't see it surviving. But now it's probably 8 foot tall and it is absolutely gorgeous.
Wow.
And it gets care. It has been potted on several times. It gets a little trim once or twice a year, but it's not getting really big attention. So I guess that has to be a good one for a beginner as well.
Yeah, sometimes the problem with beginners is they're fussing too much. You know, they're thinking of being kind by watering a plant constantly or fiddling about with it. I mean, things like that is probably a weeping fig Ficus benjamina you've got there, I would imagine. And, you know, they hate being moved. So if you found a plant and it's in its sweet spot and it's happy, then you know, leave it there and let it get on with it, because oftentimes, and say beginners can go wrong by just constantly fiddling with plants, overwatering them, overfeeding them, and sometimes you're just best off ignoring plants and they'll do their thing and be quite happy without too much in the way of attention.
Yeah, funny enough, that particular one, it was in the sunroom and it was doing extremely well there. Lovely variegated leaf on it. But we have a toddler here in the house, and I suppose sometime early in the year she started, what would you call it, almost trying to climb it. So so it did get moved to an upstairs bathroom, and it's not getting as much sun. It's still growing as well. It still looks very healthy, but the leaf, a little bit like what you said earlier, the leaf is not variegated anymore. It's almost completely reverted to green. Now, it still looks healthy, as I say, it still is growing, but just has changed a lot. So hopefully when that phase has passed, we'll be able to bring it back down.
Yeah. That's the thing. You've got to sort of, you know, when you've got children and animals, you have to be aware of that. And sometimes plants have to be shifted about as a result. But I think that's interesting how leaves do respond to different light conditions. And that means that you do get real variation, particularly with variegated leaves, which, you know, there's a degree of instability there in terms of how the variegation looked.
Yeah. And the other houseplant, as I said, that we have here is a peace lily. And that actually, I don't know exactly where it started, but it came from somebody's house. And over the years, it had got really big. It was in probably a 45 centimeter pot, and it was the full of the pot. And it was gone a little bit big for where it was, but at the very start of our full lockdown here in Ireland, which was sometime in March, we decided we'd split it and divide it and pot it up. So there was 20 odd pots around the place here. We split the plant and we put them into these pots, and my wife put up something on social media that they were at the front door for anybody to take, and they were snapped up. But it's been brilliant over the last while to see the pictures of them, say 6 months on, in different people's houses. Now, I'm sure some of them have died because some people haven't sent us the pictures, but some of them have been doing really well. And it was it was just something nice to share at that time. So yeah, what you said earlier about house plants being handed down and cuttings coming off maybe a grandparent's house plant, that's a nice thing to do, and it's a nice connection, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I'm really big on plant swaps and propagation because, you know, especially as people come into growing house plants, it can seem like a very sort of expensive thing, and they look on Instagram and they see all these very fancy plants and they think they're going to spend a fortune. And actually, I mean, I don't know what proportion of my collection I would say has come from cuttings or small or growing from seed, but it's quite a large percentage. And I really encourage people to do that because it's a great way of just sharing houseplants and learning about them. And I get a lot of satisfaction from doing that. And it's great to see other people, you know, succeeding with the plant that you've grown.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. And it's a nice connection between, as you said, connection between houses as well, you know, your grandparents and so on. So it's mm-hmm. it's nice. You mentioned your own collection there. Roughly how many houseplants, different varieties do you currently have?
Well, I never count because it's just too scary. but I did actually I've just been sort of doing the juggle that I do at this time of year of certain plants going into my greenhouse, certain plants coming out of the greenhouse and coming into the house. And I just counted up my agaves. I've got 14 agaves, which I was thinking, gosh, when these get bigger, I'm going to have to do something else with them because this isn't going to work. But so yeah. I would say, I mean, just cacti and succulents, I've probably got about 50, I would say, and then wow. I've probably got about 20 different Hoyas. I mean, I would say probably we're talking about 150 plants, but that's some of them are really small, not all of them are huge. I know big plants are in fashion. I don't actually have that many massive plants. Most of my plants are quite small, but yeah, it does fluctuate because I do give a lot of plants away. But yeah, it's in the three figures for sure.
Wow, that's good. And just this was, and again, it's probably a difficult question, your kind of favourites. So what would your personal favourites be?
Well, I do love the Hoyas. I have to say I've been into Hoyas for a long time. And Hoyas are, or the wax flowers, they're also known, of suddenly, you know, aroids were the thing that everyone was going nuts for a few months ago. But actually, Hoyas are now coming up on the inside and becoming incredibly popular and unfortunately more expensive to buy. But I do love them. So if you don't recognise the name, they are sort of succulent, leathery-leaved, trailing or climbing plants that they come from Southeast Asia mainly, and they're epiphytic plants on the whole, and that grow in crevices in trees, and they have, I mean, they do vary greatly, but usually they have sort of leathery leaves and they produce these clusters of flowers which are very, very curious. They look kind of almost furry. They're either usually pink or white or sometimes yellow, and they're often scented. And they're just such curious plants and quite tough, quite easy to grow depending on which cultivar or species you have. But they're just tremendously interesting. And I definitely would say they're in my top three. I also love the Kiesneriad family, which includes things like African violets and primulinas and apicias. These are the hairy-leaved, again, often epiphytic plants, which often have beautiful flowers as well. Not very trendy, the Kiesneriads, unlike the Hoyas, but I do love them, and I've got quite a large collection of those.
Very good. And so that's two. You're saying your top three, so what's the number one?
It's like choosing a favourite child. But I would say, I mean, I do have a couple of plants which are very much the trendy poster plants of the moment. And I made the mistake of telling my husband what they were worth the other day. Not that I'm going to sell them, but I do have the Swiss cheese plant, Monstrum deliciosa, there's a cultivar of that called Thai Constellation. And Thai Constellation has cream and green splashed leaves. And I actually have three of those, two bigger ones and one seedling one, or one smaller plant. And it's quite a dramatic plant in that, obviously, you've got the drama of the holy leaves, and you've also got the splashy variegation. And I'm actually today going to be chopping one of them up, because I've decided to, I can't keep both of the big ones because they're just getting too big. So I've decided I'm going to chop one of them up and send the cuttings to people who've been particularly good to me over the years in various ways. So I'm going to be doing that today, actually, and it's a bit scary because it's a sort of a big chunky plant, but it's got very, very small spaces between the leaf nodes. So it's going to be a bit of a surgery taking place today. But I do love those plants because they are really dramatic, and when a leaf unfurls, you've got true drama of this huge leaf kind of coming to life, and you can see what pattern. Every leaf has a different pattern, and every leaf has a different arrangement of holes. So it's quite fascinating to watch.
Yeah, I know that one as well. So I'm delighted with myself now. I know two out of your six plants. But yeah, that is a super plant. Really, really dramatic and gorgeous looking. Yeah.
I bought a tiny plant. It's produced by Tissue Culture, so they were sort of, you know, really had a couple of leaves on them, and I've grown them from that size. And I got them, you know, very cheaply. But now they're in such demand and going for such large amounts of money. But I kind of feel like, I think the more we can kind of propagate rare plants and spread them around, the better, because that way everyone can enjoy them. And there isn't this kind of feeling of it's an elitist thing where only people who can spend, you know, several hundred pounds, dollars or euros on a plant can get hold of it.
Yeah, it's a nice thing to do as well. Like it's a nice gift. It's, you know, something with a bit more meaning in it and a bit more longevity in it. So yeah, it's nice.
Well, yeah, hopefully so.
As we sort of move towards the end here, obviously we mentioned at the start you have a book coming out, and I absolutely love the title of it. So it's Legends of the Leaf, and it's the story behind 25 iconic houseplants. So maybe tell us a little bit about that. I know you're crowdfunding for it at the moment, so you could tell us a bit about that as well, and where people could find it.
Yeah, so Legends of the Leaf is crowdfunding on a crowdfunding publisher called Unbound. So you can just go to unbound.com, and I'm on the front page at the moment. And the reason why I went for a crowdfunding model was a couple of different reasons. I kept being told by publishers that, you know, houseplant books were kind of over, that there'd been a great, you know, flurry of houseplant books, and really there wasn't enthusiasm for any more. But I kept thinking to myself, well, I've got this idea that I don't think has been done before, and I know that my audience would love it. So I approached Unbound with my idea, and they loved it. And so I decided to go down that route. And the benefits of that are that the book will only happen if I reach my funding target. So there's going to have to be a real demand for it to be made. The downside is that, you know, you have to kind of pledge and then wait for me to write the book. But hopefully I'm setting aside time to do that. So, and I'm really excited about getting on with doing that, because what I want to do is the 25 plants that I'm going to profile in depth, I'm going to try to give information that you just don't read online or in houseplant books usually. Oftentimes, you know, if you go online and Google a particular houseplant, you kind of sometimes get the same old advice, and it feels like it's, you're not really getting anything other than the kind of same information parroted over and over again. So I'm going to try to do some really good research, make sure that each one will have some practical care information, but it'll also be a story. So I'll be telling the story behind the plant. So where the plant grows in the wild, and how it grows, and how it's regarded or used by the people who live there. And also how the plant ended up getting into our homes. So there's loads of fascinating stories behind houseplants, how they ended up coming to us And I'm going to be researching those and bringing that to you in a kind of a narrative for each plant. Plus, each plant will have a specially commissioned illustration from a lady called Helen Entwistle, who's an illustrator. So it should be a really beautiful book, I hope.
Yeah, sounds beautiful and sounds interesting. And yeah, even something simple there where you're saying you go into the story of where they originated, and if somebody reads that and understands that, that should give them an insight as to how to actually look after it as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's really true. One of the plants that kind of sparked this for me was the string of pearls, or string of beads as it's known, goes under a couple of different Latin names, Curio Rolianus or Senecio Rolianus. Very distinctive plant with these strings of totally globular leaves, succulent plant that comes from South Africa, and so many people kill this plant. Literally, you see them flying out of the garden centre, and I know that 75% of them are going to be dead within a few weeks, because people take the plant home and it's in a pot which probably doesn't have enough drainage, is probably too rich in organic matter. And if you start to understand how that plant grows in the wild, it really helps you to understand what it means in terms of care in the home. So that's what I'm going to try to get to, that really useful information and all the fascinating stuff that there is to know about each of these plants that's so popular now.
Yeah, it's a brilliant concept. And again, I love the name of it. I think it sounds exciting. So yeah, really looking forward to it.
That's the idea. I think, I think sometimes people who don't get houseplants kind of think, oh, what's the fuss all about? But I really want to show that there are these amazing stories, which, in themselves are, there's stories about plants, but there are also stories about people. So that will be fascinating to unravel that in the book.
Yeah, for sure. You have, obviously, we mentioned it as well, you have the podcast, which is out. Is that out every week?
Yeah, it's every Friday, For My Sins. So, yeah, as you know, making a podcast is hard work.
Yeah.
It comes out weekly on a Friday. And, yeah, I'm on episode 160 coming out this week. So it's...
Well done. And it's all about indoor gardening. So, yeah, house plants and other... Indoor type gardening,
cover everything from microgreens to and chilies to cacti and succulents and carnivorous plants, and sometimes it's just me talking or me talking to an expert, and I tackle a listener question every week. So there's always something in there that's of interest. And I do have listeners complaining to me because they say, oh, I wasn't really interested in this kind of plant until I listened to your show, and now I've added them to my wish list, and it's your fault that I'm spending so much money. I have to be blamed for that, unfortunately.
Yeah. You have written another book as well, The Allotment Keeper's Handbook. That's still in publication?
No, sadly not. It is out of print. And in fact, my husband wanted a couple of copies this week to send to somebody. And I said, sorry, dear, they've all gone. I've got a couple of copies of my own, but I don't even have any spare copies of that now. But yeah, that came out in 2008, a long time ago now. But again, at the time I had an allotment and had done for a few years. And that book really kind of came at a time when allotments were really, really popular. And it's a kind of I tried to make it sort of an interesting, fun kind of book whilst giving good solid information about having an allotment. And I really loved writing that book, and I had really good feedback about it.
Good.
I don't have an allotment anymore because I've got a reasonably sized garden, it's great, and I learned so much through writing that book. It was a really good experience. But sadly, out of print. So you have to sort of, look out for it in your local charity shop or take a punt on one of those eBay auctions.
eBay or somewhere, yeah. We're kind of wrapping up here, and thank you very much for the education, because as I said, the knowledge level is so poor here with me on houseplants. So thank you for that. Maybe, Jane, you'd tell people where people can find you.
Yeah, well, my website's just janeperrone.com, and there you can listen to the podcast through the website. If you're not a very techie person, you can just click on an individual episode and listen to that episode. But you can also there's links there to subscribe on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and all those other platforms. So that's the place to go for really for all my stuff. And there's a link on the front page to the Unbound crowdfunder right now. So I'm also on Instagram as j.l.perrone and on Twitter as at Jane Perrone. And I also run a Twitter chat on a Tuesday evening at 9 o'clock BST or GMT, whichever it is, called Houseplant Hour, and that's just an hour for people to chat about their plants.
Okay, and so that's where somebody comes on and questions, any questions they have and that type of thing, is it?
Yeah, people can post pictures of their plants or ask for advice or give advice. It's a very sort of free-form chat, and sometimes we have a theme, sometimes we don't, but people just use it as a chance to show off their plants and ask questions and ask for advice. And it's great because we have lots of really good growers on there who are always happy to identify plants or help with problems. So it's always a quite a relaxing hour and quite nice to get away from the stressful news of the day, whatever that may be.
Yeah. So Jane, that's brilliant. As I said, thanks for the education. Few tips there. I'm definitely going to try some of those houseplants that you mentioned. I'll start with the beginner ones though, and then maybe progress up along. So thank you very much for coming on Master My Garden podcast.
My pleasure.
So that's been this week's episode. A huge thanks to Jane for coming on. As I said a couple of times in the interview, my knowledge on houseplants will be quite poor, and it was really interesting to hear, you know, an expert speak about it. And I suppose to highlight that you don't need to be daunted by them, that there is plants that are pretty much bulletproof. The couple that we have here, as I say, they do get looked after, but they're certainly not plants that are impossible to grow. They're easy enough to grow. So people are a little bit daunted by houseplants generally, but it just goes to show that you don't need to be. So a huge thanks to Jane for coming on, and best of luck with the book. So you can check out that on the links that we mentioned. So if you enjoyed the podcast, please share with all your gardening friends. And if there's anything you'd like me to cover, just let me know. Happy to cover topics that listeners are looking for. And you can find me on the social channels. It's Facebook at Master My Garden and Instagram at Master My Garden. So I hope everyone's staying safe. I hope everyone's well. And that's been this week's episode. Thanks for listening. And until the next time, happy gardening.